Developments on new ownership dealings, more names added to the offensive coordinator search, and we finally dive into one of the available veteran quarterbacks who could be on the market to join Washington in 2023. All of that coming right now on Locked On Commanders.
Your daily podcast on the Washington Commanders, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Commanders podcast, all you Commanders fans out there, part of Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. We are your daily podcast covering the Washington Commanders, and we are free and available on all platforms, including YouTube and the WUSA 9 Plus app on your Roku or your Amazon Fire Stick. And of course, we thank you for making us your first listen or your first view of the day. I am David Harrison. He is Chris the Rooster Russell, both of us credential members of your media covering the Washington Commanders. Chris is doing it for the Team 980, where he and Pete Medhurst are rocking the Team 980 airwaves every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern, or anytime you need them on the Odyssey app. And of course, you can find me writing about the Commanders for Commander Country, a part of Sports Illustrated's Fan Nation.
I don't know if we would consider it rocking, but
every time I listen, it's a rocking good time, Chris.
Maybe we're going to be in a rocking chair soon, sooner than later. But I appreciate that, David. Thank you. This episode, guys, is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. That's right, the official sportsbook of the National Football League. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/lockedon today to get started. We thank you again for making us your first listen and view of the day. And David, we jump right into it. This story broke, as a matter of fact, in my final segment on the radio on Monday morning. So I haven't really had an opportunity to talk about it a whole lot. So these are kind of my first opinions. I'm not sure about you, but the New York Post and investor sources, whatever those are, says reportedly that Jeff Bezos, of course, the Amazon founder and executive and $115 billion bazillionaire, is planning on selling the Washington Post in order and in conjunction with buying the Washington Commanders. WUSA9's Darren Haynes, our colleague and our content partner, points out that in the New York Post article, and this is true, and I believe he also talked to somebody else and in the Bezos camp, they say the Post, the Washington Post, not the New York Post, which is who reported this, is not for sale. So here's my question to get us started. Assuming that the Post and the investor angle is correct, and again, have no idea if it is, why would Bezos have to sell the Washington Post in order to buy the Washington Commanders? That's what I'm not quite getting.
So I don't know. So have to is not the appropriate term, right? Because he doesn't have to sell the Washington Post in order to buy the Washington Commanders. And for anybody out there thinking that, well, maybe he's not allowed to own a news outlet that would cover the team that he owns, Monument Sports definitely owns media outlets and owns the teams that those media outlets cover. Well, so that is not a problem.
I could just stop you there. Dan Snyder owned the radio station I work for now more than 5 years, but I worked with him for five years. So he owned the team and that. The team did not own the radio station. Dan Snyder did.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, so that is not what's happening here. What's happening here is that the Washington Post, essentially, if you're Dan Snyder and you believe you're a victim in this, which I think we've come to understand that Dan Snyder feels like he is a victim in everything that has gone down with this organization and basically him being forced to sell his team. You can draw a straight line from Dan Snyder having to sell this team now because his relationship with the league and everything else has just gone so far south, to the Washington Post being the news outlet that broke all the stories that quite honestly needed to be broken because the culture inside the organization was toxic and terrible for everybody involved. So the Washington Post, by doing their job, essentially is the enemy of Dan Snyder, and the friend of my enemy is also my enemy, right? But, and so with Bezos, like, I don't know, you know, there's conspiracies and maybe they're founded. I don't know that Bezos essentially said, yes, let's go ahead with these exposés because we want to force Dan Snyder to eventually sell this team because I want to buy this team. And that might be where Dan is coming from. But essentially, if Jeff Bezos moves forward and sells the Washington Post, it's going to be looked at as an olive branch of like, look, I know you have certain kind of feelings about the Washington Post because this is the publication that essentially led to your demise. So I'm going to now separate myself from the Washington Post moving forward as kind of a gift to you. It's like your going away gift to you that you're not selling. So Dan Snyder can lay his head on his $1 billion pillows at night and say, I didn't sell to the same, to an owner who also owns the organization that led to me selling. I sold to a guy who's not connected because right beforehand, he sold it. It's honestly, it's ego is what it boils down to. It's all about protecting Dan Snyder's ego. And for Jeff Bezos, JP Finley actually mentioned this on Twitter as well, real quick, that being the owner of a football team, especially an NFL football team, much more lucrative these days than being the owner of a newspaper. So it makes business sense for Jeff Bezos anyway. And if he can, if this gets Dan Snyder to let go a little bit easier and sleep better at night, so be it.
Yeah, I wonder, and this is just speculation on my end, so I'm curious what you think about this. Yeah. I wonder if the NFL, you know, maybe got involved here. You know, when Jeff didn't make the first bid, and when Bank of America keeps trying to get him to bid to ante up the price, or to, you know, I wonder if kind of the deal breaker or the hey wink wink nudge is Dan's told me, meaning Roger or some hotshot in the NFL, he won't sell to you. Sell the paper, maybe he'll consider. Sell the paper and he'll let you bid, or he'll seriously consider. So that's the only thing I can think of, and that might seem like little time stuff, but the Dan Snyder that I've covered my whole life, and again, I worked for him for 5 years, and I want to be clear, Dan treated me with respect, and we had good conversations, and to my face, he never treated me in any way, shape, or form poorly. So any criticism that I have is because he's ruined the franchise, not done anything personally to me. Now, to my colleagues or to my friends, of course. So I'm frustrated with him, but I just point that out to say, you know, Dan cares about little wins. He cares about like ego things. So that's one thing we can't discount here. Here's a question that I had for you, David, curious on your thoughts. If Bezos, who again says he's not selling the Washington Post, and again, I wouldn't believe everything you hear. I'm not saying I know, but I wouldn't believe everything you hear. If Bezos kept control of the Washington Post and bought the team, however that worked out, would that be problematic in your eyes that the chief number one news outlet in the area also is owned by the team or I'm sorry, by the same man?
No, not in the slightest, because at the end of the day, journalistic ethics are journalistic ethics. And I can tell you, you already know this. So I say I can tell you, I mean our audience, Nikki Javala is not going to sugarcoat her coverage of the Washington Commanders because Jeff Bezos owns both entities. Sam Fortier is not going to not report that players are disgruntled with Scott Turner and his play calling and everything else because Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post. So no, if anything, just from getting to know those two reporters over the last year, I would not be at all concerned. I mean, again, NBC Sports Washington has a direct partnership with the Washington Commanders. Jeff, JP Finley, but I don't know why I call him Jeff, but JP Finley goes on the field at halftime of every home game to try to help amp up the home crowd. Yet when Ron Rivera started Carson Wentz and the Commanders season literally fell apart in the span of a weekend, who was one of the main people and first people to call out Ron Rivera and basically talk about how a healthier franchise would make a certain kind of move, but that this franchise basically is too sick to be able to make, was JP Finley. So, I mean, so again, journalistic ethics is journalistic ethics. And if you have them, which most of these people do, I would say all of them. I mean, I don't know everybody's backdoor dealings, right? But I would say that everybody has them. That's not going to matter.
Yeah. I'll just add again, this not trying to revisit the past. You know, I would say this, you know, I've worked for in my career, Paul Allen, the late Paul Allen, whose family still owns the Seattle Seahawks. I worked for Dan Snyder. I worked for Ted Leonsis, who runs Monumental and owns Monumental, the Capitals, the Wizards, Capital One Arena. Three prominent owners. They have never, ever, ever told me one second, what to write, what to speak, how to speak, anything like that. So I don't think there would be. I don't think there would be any problem from, say, Bezos owning the Commanders to the Washington Post. And part of it, like you said, is the ethics that a Nikki Javala, Sam Fortier, you know, Barry Sferluga, you know, so on and so forth have. So I don't think it would be any issue at all. And I certainly don't think the Washington Post would give the Commanders organization any unfavorable or unfair credit when they don't deserve it, period.
No, absolutely. And something real quick I want to add to the whole, because you know, again, Darren said what he said. I know JP had mentioned kind of before as well. We've talked about it here. But also in that New York Post article about Jeff Bezos potentially selling his interest in the Washington, or the Washington Post, apparently Jeff actually went to the Washington Post not that long ago, and right, what was described as a very awkward visit to tell everybody that I'm not selling it. It's almost kind of like one of those things like, why are you showing up out of nowhere to tell us you're not selling the newspaper? Mm-hmm. If you're, you know what I mean? It's always like, you don't protest too much and all that stuff. Like it's definitely strange, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about egos. We've got more on the ego side of things, but we'll have opportunities to talk about that.
Absolutely. Again, I would be leery of whatever anybody says at this time. They usually call the draft period and free agency period lying season. Not accusing anybody of lying. I would just say be careful and don't always believe what you hear. All right. The search for an offensive coordinator continues. On Monday, the Commanders met with a stud. We'll explain what we mean by that next on Locked On Commanders. But first, this episode of LOC is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. That's right, baby. The NFL playoffs, the conference championships are here. And we are super pumped up for our new sports betting partner with Locked On because they are the number one sports book in America, FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They have so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. New customers join today to get started and get $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/lockedon. David, I already joined the fray. I had a couple of $5 single game parlays, I should say, on the conference champion, on the divisional playoffs over the weekend. And well, I came up short, but it was fun. It was fun to have that rooting interest back again. Look, no doubt about it. FanDuel
has. I was a Jaguars missed field goal away from turning $7 into $97.
Ooh, there you go. Yeah. There you go. See, I got a little greedy when I turned 25 into 250 against the Jaguars a week and a half ago. It didn't exactly work out for me on Sunday, but it was fun to be back in the game. And this Sunday, Cincinnati and Kansas City, the line spread, guys, is going crazy back and forth. Kansas City opened as favorites. The Bengals jumped ahead. Now back to Kansas City. Just keep an eye. FanDuel's got all of that information for you and covered, and that's where you can make your action on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So football fans, don't miss out. Again, place your first $5 bet to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/lockedon. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. All right, thanks once again for making the Locked On Commanders podcast your first listen and view of the day. Now subscribe to the Locked On NFL podcast. Get daily conversations on the biggest NFL stories, plus in-depth analysis on the biggest games with NFL key matchups every Friday, Monday. Local insiders cover the weekend with game-to-game episodes. It's Locked On NFL, available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. So, David, on Monday, the Commanders met with Eric Studesville, of the Miami Dolphins. He's been an interim head coach, an offensive coordinator, a run game coordinator over a long career and path in the NFL. He's lasted a few regimes in Miami, most notably when Mike McDaniel got that job. Mike McDaniel didn't blow him out, which is typical, but not always. For instance, Ron Rivera kept Nate Katzer from the previous regime. It's typical to blow out the entire staff, but it doesn't always happen. Randy Jordan, another perfect example of somebody Ron kept. So he's lasted a couple of regimes in Miami. Mike McDaniel kept him. He's the run game coordinator. He's the assistant head coach, which doesn't mean exactly what people kind of think it means. He coached against Ron and won Super Bowl 50, then with the Denver Broncos, Ron then with the Carolina Panthers. He's 55 years old. Eric Studesville, I can't make up my mind whether I like this. I certainly think you could do a lot worse than him. I don't know him personally, so I can't say I have firsthand knowledge. I know I've talked to some people that have high respect for him, but you know, most guys aren't going to get trashed when they've done nothing really wrong.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think at the end of the day, what we're seeing in the Washington Commanders offensive coordinator search is that they are at least talking to people who are kind of connected with some of the more innovative parts of today's game. And I think that's important because while, you know, Ron Rivera and Martin Mayhew might sit at the table at the end of the season and say, we want to be, you know, a 2-1 run to pass offense and all these other things, what they want to be a little bit more than that is winners, right? And that's mm-hmm. kind of what you have to lean on is like they want to win games more than they want to be that 2-1 run ratio, run pass ratio. And to be honest with you, like what Scott was doing, if they really have had a problem with what Scott was doing from a theological standpoint, if it was working, then, well, you would like to think that they would just kind of, you know, be quiet and get out of the way. You know, that's a whole other conversation we could have in a whole other show. But you like the fact that they're trying to tap into some of these resources. You know, Mike McDaniel is thought of as one of the more, you know, forward thinking coaches in today's NFL. You see him come in, you know, he goes from a San Francisco 49ers offense system that really was limited by Jimmy Garoppolo in being able to push the ball downfield, yet they still tried to push the ball downfield. He goes to Miami. Now he's got a quarterback who, quite honestly, deep ball wise, is even more limited than Jimmy Garoppolo because Tua Tagovailoa, while he's got a better arm, like, you know, in a long throw competition, the accuracy is terrible. You know, the further you get from 20 yards of air pass or passing through the air, the less accurate Tua Tagovailoa gets. And what you see is he turns the Dolphins offense into something that can operate sideline to sideline, also have a little bit of success in the running game. And I know the Dolphins had a late season collapse. You know what I mean? Obviously aren't going to be happy with the way the year ended, but I think there is something to be said that given an offense that, you know, you go from a limited quarterback to a backup quarterback that's even more limited. And then you go to an unheralded rookie. And I know everybody sees what happens with Brock Purdy, but not every situation is cut from the same cloth. The fact that the Dolphins were able to do some of the things they were able to do, not only actually make the playoffs, but then be competitive in the playoffs with a guy like Skylar Thompson, I mean, that in and of itself is pretty impressive. So taking some of those notes and bringing them onto your staff certainly at least merits an interview. Kind of like what I talked about with Brian Greasy. It warrants an interview, a conversation, even if it doesn't end up in a hire.
Yeah. I mean, it helps to have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, too. Now, absolutely. Washington would not have that, but they do have, you know, Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel for now, and of course, Jahan Dotson. And it'll be interesting to see if a guy like Gesicki, who is a free agent tight end and mm-hmm. who hadn't been able to get a long-term deal franchise, might, you know, be interested in, who knows? I mean, we're hey, trying man. To connect too many
guys dots. Like to go with their coaches. I mean, yeah. Brandon Scherff went to Jacksonville, his old O-line coaches down there. I mean, those kinds of things matter sometimes.
No, you're absolutely right. And by the way, Phil Rauscher, the guy that you're talking about, helped create that big 4th-and-1 conversion that helped them win. You know, obviously the playoff game against the Chargers, just for those that remember that particular play. So good point. That's all a part of the mix. I'm more curious, and there's other candidates. We're going to get into Thomas Brown, who's set to interview this week. Don't know exactly what day, and other candidates that are out there that maybe haven't been contacted yet. But, you know, one thing about, you know, and I said stud. I mean, obviously, it was play on words. Studisville or Studsville, however you pronounce his name, because I've heard both. One thing about him is he's not short on experience. He's probably been between college and the NFL about, you know, 12, 13 different places. Again, he has had some good running games along the way, and he hasn't always had studs. So if we're there's that word again. So if we're thinking about how can they maximize Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson in the final year of his rookie deal and perhaps his final year in Washington, along with Jonathan Williams and who knows who else, maybe Jared Patterson comes back, what have you. If we're trying to find a way to maximize that part of the offense, which, again, you mentioned the 2-1 ratio and whatnot, and that's not realistic, but more of a 55-45-ish balance, say, if we're trying to do what the Cincinnati Bengals did to the Buffalo Bills, missing 60% of their starting offensive line, then a guy with running game prowess, run game coordination, run game success, wherever he's pretty much gone, Studisville or Studsville could be a good choice, a good choice for the Washington Commanders. And we also should point out, you know, for whatever purposes, he would also, they have to interview two minority candidates. So now they have satisfied that part of the requirement with the Rooney rule. Again, I don't think that's why they're talking to him, because obviously they did one last week in London, the Atlanta quarterbacks coach. I'd like to think that wasn't just checking the box. I would like to think that they're legitimately interested in him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always going to be that thought kind of hanging over people's heads. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's imperative that teams, you know, you interview. I understand there's a mandatory or there's a mandate there, and you have to satisfy that mandate. But do it, fulfill it, giving people who deserve the interviews the opportunity to interview. Even if you kind of already know who your guy is, getting interview experience and getting the opportunity to kind of sit in the chair and pitch your theme, your method, your football ideology to other people, and especially who've been sitting in head coach seats, is very, very important. And that experience alone is incredibly valuable. So yeah, the coaching fraternity, I'm sure that these guys are getting guys who deserve the opportunity to at least sit in an interview and get that experience, even if they're not being seriously considered for the job, because they already kind of know who they want. And, you know, you look at that Falcons coach, he's getting an opportunity to elevate his coaching chops at the Senior Bowl this year. So obviously a guy that is well regarded within the league, not just, you know, in this interview portion, because he's getting an opportunity at an event that has produced, I think, like 80% of their roster has been drafted over the last three seasons. So it's very important.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And don't forget that connection that our buddy Teresh from Tega made about Ron Rivera's wife and the wife of Eric Studenfield. So, you know, that you might think that's not important, but trust me, in this organization, it is indeed important. All right, coming up, should the Commanders drive a new car? A new car, they once said on The Price is Right. We'll tell you next, right here on LOC.
All right, guys, here's the comparison of a football team to a vehicle very, very often. We talk about the quarterback as the driver of said car, but perhaps the Washington Commanders just need to get themselves a whole new car. We're not talking about trading Terry. We're not talking about trading AG. We're talking about bringing in quarterback Derek Carr, who is obviously available via trade, but most likely, I would say, going to be available via fresh new contract when he gets released by the Las Vegas Raiders, because right. Derek Carr and the Las Vegas Raiders are done. Like, they are beyond done. I mean, this man got sent home with weeks left in the regular season and got told, you know, thanks, but no thanks, don't come back. And then he's on Twitter already, you know, saying his goodbyes to Raiders fans and the organization and everything else. I mean, you know, it's not the ugliest divorce that we've ever seen, Chris, but it might be the most definitive divorce we've ever seen with time still left on the clock. Really? Yeah. Like, it's amazing, honestly, how unugly it has really been, given just how bluntly this relationship ended. But should the Commanders be interested in trading for Derek Carr? Don't even let him get to the open market.
Okay. So I would have said absolutely yes to that if the Commanders hadn't already made such a bad blunder in being over aggressive in trading for Carson Wentz and surrendering two, as it turns out, third round picks. To me, they don't have the ammunition. They don't have the capital. Now, unless you're talking about a player and maybe a pick that isn't as valuable, i.e. a fifth round or a sixth round pick, where Las Vegas gets some sort of compensation, maybe, depending on who the player is. You know, we talked about a Cam Sims, you know, type. Maybe you could possibly look into something like that, or a guy that you were getting ready to cut, an Andrew Norwell or Chase Roullier, something like that, David. Possibly. But if you're just asking me, can we afford two first round picks or first and a third or 2 seconds or whatever the case might be? Absolutely no. But I would have probably said yes if you hadn't already made the bad blunder a year ago.
Yeah, it's really interesting, right? Because really, at the end of the day, I think the only reason you make the trade for Derek Carr if you're the Washington Commanders is because you think he might not choose you as a free agent, and you want him, but you think he might not choose you. Because I mean, let's be honest, like, you know, $28 million is a lot of money to spend on a quarterback. You're going to pay quarterbacks this money. He's on the hook right now for $34.8 million. That's $35 million. When you really look at it, you know, maybe you get him to agree to some sort of an extension. You tack on two more years, you sign him through the time he's 36 years old, and maybe you give him more guarantees, but you spread that money out a little bit drop his 2023 hits, maybe 28 million, right where Carson kind of was. And then you spread out the money over the next few years, give him 38 million over the next 3 years, type of thing. And for the Las Vegas Raiders, it's a 5.6 million dead cap number if they trade him or if they release him. So it's really not that big of a deal on the cap end. And if they get some draft capital back for it, then they'll be happy just to go with that. The reason I think if you're the Washington Commanders, you don't do it is twofold. One is, like you said, the mess with Carson Wentz. You've already sunk a third round pick into your quarterback position this year on a quarterback that you're not even going to have on the roster. And I know a lot of people say, Brandon Scherff's compensatory pick is going to give them back that third. But here's the thing. You're not getting back that third. You're getting a third. Yes. Granted, you are going to get a third round pick from the Brandon Scherff signing, presumably, but you're not getting back anything. Like, the third round pick that you have is still going to Indianapolis. Unless Indianapolis says, here's your third round pick back, don't worry about giving us anything in exchange for it, you're not getting that pick back. And even if you trade back in round one from, say, 16 to 20, and you net yourself a third round pick, again, it's not getting the pick back because your pick is still gone. You're getting a pick, yes. But if that third round pick existed because you didn't trade for Carson Wentz and you traded back, you would just have an additional. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Have three third round picks instead of two is your point. Right.
Like, if I go make a $10,000 down payment on a car and then I make $20,000 my next paycheck, sure. I didn't get that 10 grand back plus 10 grand. No, I still lost that 10 grand. I just now have 20 grand. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of the way, and maybe I'm just splitting hairs here, but for the Washington Commanders, one, you've already got draft capital sunk into your quarterback position before you ever even step on the field. And presumably you got to find two new quarterbacks, not just one, because you always have to have an emergency third quarterback, not even talk about camp bodies and practice squads and all that stuff. Unless you go my route and you just keep Jake Fromm as your third, but that's a further discussion. So that's reason number one. Reason number two, I think we need to be done with veteran quarterbacks who really don't have much of a choice. Like, let's be honest, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I'm a big fan of the dude, was a bigger fan of the dude before he came to Washington, to be quite honest with you. But I'm a big fan of the dude, but he didn't go to Washington because it was just his dream job. You know what I mean? Let's be fair. Carson Wentz, there's already been speculation that if he had a choice, if he had a no trade clause or an option, he probably wouldn't have picked Washington because of all the stuff going around this franchise as well. So I think we need to be done having veterans who don't have a choice and make them be here and say, you're going to now be the leader of this team, whether you like it or not. I think if you bring in a veteran, it needs to be a guy that chooses to be here. So if Derek Carr signs as a free agent, fantastic. If Ryan Tannehill gets released, or I don't even know what his contract situation is, to be honest with you, but if he comes here willingly, fantastic. Jimmy G, same thing. But if you're not getting a veteran quarterback that wants to be in Washington for whatever reason, then you need to roll with either Sam, or you need to go get yourself a veteran, like I said, to compete with them. And I mean, again, I'll keep saying this until we really have this full discussion. There is a veteran who wants to be on the team, and that is Taylor Heinicke. And he's okay being the backup if it were to come to that. I had this conversation with Linnell and Doc on 106.7 not that long ago. We'll get deeper into that conversation as we go through the offseason, but there are options here. And I think for Washington, be done with tying a guy's hands behind his back and saying you're going to lead this team, and be done with dumping draft capital into veteran quarterbacks that you don't know if they're actually going to fit or not. You've done plenty of that. It hasn't worked out. Move on to something. Try a different idea and see if that'll work out for you.
Yeah, one quick thing that I'll add. You'll find out whether Derek Carr, if you're interested, and I don't think they are, you'll find out if Derek Carr wants to be here or not, because he's got a no-trade clause.
Well, he's got a no-trade clause. Wentz,
you can't force him to be here. He has control. So not only as a free agent, if he's cut ultimately and a trade isn't made, but just in the pre-trade process. So you'll already know. They shouldn't waste their time, quite honestly, even though I do like Derek Carr, and I do think he can certainly be a valuable addition to any franchise. We will discuss all the quarterback options, obviously, as we go along, because they will in some way, shape, or form still be in the veteran quarterback market.
I think wherever Derek Carr goes, he's not going to compete for the number one job. He's going for the number one job. And that, that already goes against what we've already been hearing from the organization this offseason, that Sam Howell's coming in to compete for the number one job. Derek Carr is not going to sign off on that. I don't believe Derek Carr would sign off on that.
Yeah, I mean, he can go to Indianapolis and be better than anything they've had in the 1 year outside of Phillip Rivers since Andrew Luck retired, no questions asked. The question is how much they are willing to pay. But they are more desperate, believe it or not, than the Commanders are, because they don't have Sam Howell. The Commanders – They might be wrong on Sam Howell, but they at least have Sam Howell. And like you mentioned, potentially Taylor Heinicke. All right, we're going to have to leave that there. Thanks again for making the Locked On Commanders podcast your first listen and view of the day. Now for your second listen and view, check out Locked On NFL Podcast, bringing you the local insights you love to the national spotlight with daily conversations on the biggest NFL stories. It's Locked On NFL, available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. I'll be back with a solo episode. Then David will take his crack solo. Then we'll be back together again before the end of the week. We will continue the coverage of the offensive coordinator search and will Jeff Bezos buy the Commanders. If you want to hop in, it's LockedOnWashingtonCommanders@gmail.com or simply send a DM on Twitter @LOCommanders. Or David Harrison, who's covered the Washington Commanders on SI.com's Fan Nation and Commander Country. I'm Chris Wilson, one half of the Russell and Ned Hershaw on the Team 980. If you're out and about, please be safe and kind to one another. Don't you dare drive like a maniac. Thank you for joining us right here on the Locked On Commanders podcast.